This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Have you ever thought about how many people around the world live in cities? It's not possible to pin down an exact figure because agencies and countries around the world use different parameters to define and measure urbanism. What is agreed upon is that more than half the world resides in urban centres. By 2050, experts estimate that 70% of people around the world will live in cities. So the question is, are our cities prepared? Joining me in the studio today to answer that question are Caroline Boos and Ren Yi from UN Studio, a Dutch architectural practice specializing in urban development and infrastructural projects. Caroline and Ren are proponents of future-proofing cities. So what does it really mean to future-proof a city? Ren, perhaps you could start us off.
I think it's in a way, as a designer, we want to be sure that whatever decision we make, it's a decision that we'd make for a longer-term strategy, something that we would try our best to understand from the findings, from the research, from the knowledge that we have accumulated all around the world, from the experience, to make a decisions that allow for a city or a building to live long and benefit the environment, also benefit the people.
Okay. So what are some of these decisions, if you wouldn't mind breaking it down for me?
There are many, I think. If you talk about with a designer, for example,
yes,
we don't really work with a checklist. Mm-hmm. But we look into what we think would be important factor that we're looking in right now. For example, I think sustainability is going to be important.
Okay.
So environmental issues are big issues. So we understand that cities today are consuming a lot, up to 70% of the energy consumption of the world, and emitting up to 70% of fossil fuel related carbon CO2 emission.
Mm.
So it is a energy guzzling, pollution pumping machine that we are living in right now.
This is a global problem.
This is a global problem.
Are there any cities that have bucked that trend and who are doing much better than others?
I think the Nordic cities are quite interesting. I think Singapore is doing a good job as well. I think the Nordic city, for example, now with innovation, with the discussion about smart city coming in, there is a lot of tools and a lot of technological tools and innovation that could curb that discussion, the issue. So, for example, UN Studio does a lot of research as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the research that we did is a collaboration with TNO, which is a Dutch research facility, and a printing company. And we created this printable facade system that harvests solar energy on facade itself.
Wow, so no more solar panels on roofs.
Exactly. So there are a lot of surface on the buildings that actually gets a lot of light and is not really utilized, for example.
So it's optimizing the energy harvesting.
Yeah. So the solar visual, the idea is also to integrate design component in it. So you see solar visual, you see PV cells these days, they don't really look that sexy, we have to say.
They never have.
Yeah. So the idea from a designer's perspective is to create a system of printable glass that will actually also deliver a good amount of harvest, energy harvest from the sun, so that you can customize and print a facade in front of the solar itself and use it as a tool to design the building.
So that the film in front of the glass then is a printed film.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we talked about sustainability and we talk about environmental factors. Any other sort of aspects that we need to be thinking about when we look into future-proofing cities? And you can talk about it from a macro perspective.
I think the people, for me, it's the most central.
Can we future-proof the people of a city?
I think people can learn.
Okay.
I think we can learn our course of our actions and see how we could improve our behavior to also live in a way that is good for the environment as well, good for the society itself and community.
Mm.
And I think more and more cities are stepping into that direction whereby they engage with the people more, they have open data, sharing the information about the city itself from the latest real-time measurement of the pollution, the traffic, for example. And these are very important tools that you feel empowered.
Mm. Yeah, because my next question was going to be, what are some of the challenges of future-proofing cities? I have a feeling that it's people who are the main challenge of future-proofing cities. Carolyn, do you have any other insights into that?
I agree with Ren that we have a lot of ingrained habits and behaviors mm-hmm. that we don't get any encouragement to change. And and with just the right nudge, we can probably change our patterns quite easily. And this is also what governments are for, to prove, to not just provide regulation and disciplinary measures, but also positive encouragement.
Could you give me some examples of what an encouraging nudge might look like?
Subsidies, for instance, for the right sort of installations, but also helping to realize projects that can set an example. We were talking about it also on the way here. That when we are confronted with the scale of a city such as KL, we can easily get overwhelmed by all the problems. It's just seems so much and so big. However, can we do anything about all of this?
And where would you start?
Where do you start? Well, start small. And this is what we are doing with some projects also in the Netherlands, closer to home, where we do, for instance, 100 houses project, test pilots. Then we can
scale it
also,
up.
Yeah, scale it up later if it works. We can pivot what doesn't work. And in a way, funnily enough, you are a business radio station. We have in the last 10, 15 years, as architects, made a real study of business literature, because in some ways that field has been the most innovative academic field, and so we have familiarized ourselves with these ideas of pivoting and disruptive technology and so on. And our question to our field is, what can we do with these new ways of understanding people and our societal systems that pertain to the economy, but also to our field, to how we live in cities?
Because living in a city is profit and loss, isn't it? It is how much you put into your city. It is how much of an effort you put into building it and living in it. And then you reap the rewards.
Yes. Yeah. And it's our job to add value. And that's maybe, as designers, the most important question to us. How can we help add value to those cities, to these places? And for that we have more and more instruments at our disposal these days.
Okay.
Also to add on to that, I think the framework and the process matters. And I think this is quite a European thing where they engage the citizens quite a lot. And the idea was that to create this kind of a quadruple helix partnership with business, with the government, with a citizen, and with academic, with the research, they create this together, the collective way of finding a solution. So the business angle is a very crucial part. You can have idealistic ideas, idealistic concepts, and this is amazing technology to roll out. The people might say, we like that idea, but if it doesn't work for the business, it doesn't work in the end. So there are this kind of the quadruple. It needs to kind of fit in all parties in order for something to be positive for everyone, that could have a long-term sustainable growth in the innovation itself, whatever the innovation is. So this kind of partnership is something that I think we have learned more and more, really to emphasize on the project process. And whenever we get into a project, if the government are really serious, they look into that as well.
Carolyn, when I read up a little bit about your work and the work that UN Studio does, I came across this term deep planning. Do you think you could explain that to me?
Yeah, I will try to. This was something we started writing about over 20 years ago now. And what it pertains to is that we distinguish many layers. If we compare it to a building will have its structural system, how it is physically held up. Also the way you move through it with the staircases and so on. Then it has its openings where you go in and out and look at, and then also fourthly, maybe different functions, where you sit, where you cook, where you sleep, and so on. And these are all, in a way, different systems, both in the building but also in the city. And what we want to do with deep planning is really acknowledge all these systems and work with them, but also try to integrate them. Because if we, as users, are directed in our use of our city in all these different systems, but they don't have a relationship with each other, we lose enormous efficiency, and literally in terms of material loss. For instance, if you don't connect your stair, you can, or let's say positively, but you, what we do sometimes is connect our staircases with our support, structural support system, and thereby make enormous material savings. It's an example of sustainable building. So deep planning is that system relating to the city and to people in larger sections of society, a holistic approach.
Okay, so all this while we've been talking about this idea of future-proofing cities, smart cities, deep planning in cities, and to me it just sounds like a really huge concept. Can we just drill it down to buildings, for example, buildings within a city? Is it possible to future-proof buildings?
We think so more and more, and we use also digital technology to do that. For instance, we have always been early adopters of the latest computer design technology.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say 20 years ago, that made it possible for us to build very complex-looking, vibrant, interesting, uplifting buildings that looked actually more complex than they were technically, because we could use these technologies that made it much simpler to produce than it eventually looks like.
Mm.
But now we can we still use the digital technology that produces a sort of a master model of a building, complete with everything that it is about, and that's master model is like the digital twin of the real building, and you can take that with you as the owner of that building. You can take that with you and adapt it and change things see it through very easily. So this is something that to us will have an enormous impact on flexibility and resilience of buildings in the future.
But also the model help us to understand the impact of the decision. So you can do wind analysis together with the right consultants.
Mm-hmm.
You can do also a lot of simulations to make sure that these decisions are good. So
okay.
the more you include a better team mm-hmm. to input all their professional expertise into the model and to test it, the better the design would be. So in that case, future-proofing the building, it's a responsibility of the architect, I would say.
Right.
Because it's the management and control also afterwards.
Mm.
So post-occupancy analysis is also something that we are very interested in and are really trying very hard to get involved in. Because as a designer, also to follow the life of the building afterwards.
So how do you actually predict the ever-evolving needs of a city?
I think I lead a future team in the office, and the idea of that is, in fact, to do scenario planning, to lean into the future. It's not to predict. The idea is, in fact, to ensure that we have all the discussions, all the things that we know on the table, and then create scenarios. If you make such a decision, this will become of the city. If you make such a decision, that will become of the city. Allow us to be much more informed about decision in every small short-term decision that we make now is based on long-term understanding of the impact. So I do think leaning into 2040 is not about predicting, but it's also a necessary tool for us to learn and also to ensure that we don't make the wrong decisions.
And when you say that you lay out all the kind of options in front of you and you look at various kind of routes that you could go down, are you saying that you employ AI to as part of this planning?
Well, AI is a big word. I think in this case, a lot of cities are in fact using artificial intelligence and bringing in a lot of data sets to generate the possibility and the scenarios. But as far as we know, the data sets that we have now at the city, they're not that accurate as we think it should be yet. But we are getting there. There's a lot of information that are getting clearer, a lot of data sets that we can now cross-pollinate and check, and more patterns are coming up. So I do think, yes, that's definitely the direction to go. And I do think cities are now doing that. Amsterdam, for example, have their own data team, and they just look directly into data of the traffic, data of the of even down to the health of the people, and then try to see the relations between them, and for them to make a better policy and better decision as well. So the big data analytics, it's something that we definitely need to use.
And it's the way forward.
Absolutely.
I've been speaking to Carolyn Bos and Ren Yi from UN Studio, a Dutch architectural practice specializing in urban development and infrastructural projects. We've been talking about the challenges of future-proofing cities and the role its inhabitants play in its development. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.